The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
We've taken a step out of the hole, right? I think a lot of people have hope for what lies ahead here in the next several months. I mean, you think where we were this time last year. Holy smokes. I mean, everything was shut down. To drive on the highway was to sort of feel like, is this a twilight zone? I mean, there's nobody here. This has been a very dark, weird year. But I think we're not alone in this. I mean, you know, in the sweep of history, there have been plenty of dark, weird times. Well, Tim and Kathy Keller are with us, and they've been our guests here the last couple of years. They know something very well about dark times. In this past year, as the pandemic has come upon all of us, Tim's Redeemer Church, and of course, the city of New York, New York, has really sort of kind of emptied out. And in the midst of the pandemic and the city emptying out, Tim Keller was diagnosed with cancer. So here to talk about how to deal with dark times are Tim and Kathy Keller. Tim and Kathy, welcome back. How are you guys?
Hey, thank you for having us.
Yeah, always happy to have you both with us. All right, Tim, I want to start with you. I want to start with the place that that is at near the beginning of your newest book called Hope in Times of Fear. You taught, and as we reflect on Easter and the idea of hope, you know, I come back to this fact that we're consistently called to remember and affirm that our faith is based in a historical time with real people. Suffered under Pontius Pilate is like the historical, you know, thing that gives the anchor to the Apostles' Creed. How does that fit into a beginning for how we can talk about hope?
Well, I mean, I think it's because we live in history, we're embodied, and if you are told, well, somehow spring always comes after winter, and the good will eventually reassert itself and things will get better. That's an abstraction. And you say, well, that's a nice statement. But what you have with the resurrection, you're absolutely right. In the Apostles' Creed, you know, when it talks about crucified, dead, and buried, you know, or suffered under Pontius Pilate, it's definitely a way for the Apostles' Creed to say, this happened. This is not a fable. This is not a story that's kind of like an allegory that tells us things will get better eventually. This actually happened. And actually, I think about this, that I said, I got cancer, but if the resurrection of Jesus Christ actually happened in history, then everything's going to be all right. Mm-hmm. Everything eventually will be all right in history, even. Even eventually the world will be put right. So that's the reason why it's just such a robust and thick kind of hope as opposed to a thin, abstract kind.
Okay, but Tim, so there's you and Kath, and, you know, not that long ago, you go into a doctor's office, you get a cancer diagnosis, you walk out, you're changed, you're totally different. And I'm sure, you know, that day, that evening, those months forward, the two of you had to shed some tears. And even though you know Christ and you know the end of the story, it still doesn't mean that dread and fear and despair doesn't come over you like a blanket.
No.
Oh, that's
no.
Absolutely true. Yeah.
Yeah, the hope trumps it. The hope triumphs over it, but it doesn't eliminate it. Go ahead, Kat.
No, I was just going to say, because this is a historical faith, because Jesus was an actual person, a real man, and he interacted with real people, all of his followers are real people too. We have hopes, we have sorrows, we have bad days and good days, and those can all be offered to God as a way of glorifying him. When we have a good day, that's a way of saying, thank you, Jesus. We're happy that everyone's healthy and we can enjoy this day. When we have a bad day and we weep and we wonder what the next scan's going to show, we can offer that to God and say, we're scared, but we want to follow you, whatever your will is. Anything that you are experiencing in real time, in real world, can be offered to God. It's not something that's you have to maintain, keep a happy face on or something like that, or else somehow you're not glorifying God. You glorify God by giving him whatever it is that's actually happening to you in real time.
So what does that look like, Kath? I mean, to offer to God, what does that mean? I mean, how did you do that? You and Tim together, you offered Tim's cancer diagnosis to God, your despair?
Well, I had some practice with it because I had been very sick with Crohn's disease for about a decade, maybe 15 years. And my prayer became, I prayed, please take this away, please make me get better, all those prayers. And there's nothing wrong with those. But in the end, the only one that gave me any comfort was to say, God, I don't know how this glorifies you. I can't even imagine how this glorifies you. But if somehow it does, if this glorifies you, then I give it over to you and I accept it. If this is my assignment. Taking this sort of from Johnny Erickson's book, if you remember her second book, A Step Further, where she was all alone in the dark and thinking, she was going to indulge in some salacious thoughts and nobody would see her. And she realized that wasn't really the case, that the powers and principalities were all watching her to see whether she was going to obey God or not. And she was actually on the 50-yard line, of the universe with everyone, the angels, the demonic powers, all of them, waiting to see what she would do, whether she would obey God or whether she would say, in the only way I'm capable of, just even mentally, I'm going to reserve a part and do something for myself. And when you're incapable of anything else, you can't go on a mission trip and you can't go feed the hungry and you can't deal with the homeless, you can still offer to God your incomprehension of what's going on and say, I don't understand this, but if it glorifies you, okay. Hmm. So I'd had some practice doing that before Tim. Yeah.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah, I remember when John and I talked to Johnny maybe 3 years, maybe even 4 years ago. It was right after her cancer diagnosis.
Right.
And one of the things she said, Kathy, it stuck with me. I've just never forgotten it. It's such a delightful thing that she does, is that she said that she started making appointments with people. And her appointments would be like, okay, so when we're in the new heavens and the new earth, will you agree to go downhill skiing with me? And people were like, I don't, and she said, no, like this, if we believe this is a reality and this is our future, then let's start to think about it. Let's start to make some plans, let's do something. And I thought that is where faith becomes something that works in life. Right. And it's not based on some kind of like Pollyanna, like fable, like Disney view of the future. It's based on that historical story that we were talking about. So Tim, take us back to that. How does that inform what we go through?
No, exactly. That what she was doing there was she was appropriating the fact that we're talking about a material renewed universe in the future. She was just trying to make it not abstract, because the Christian hope isn't abstract. See, for her to do that was a way of just sort of forcing you to say, wait a minute, as a Christian, I guess I do believe that, don't I? Because Jesus Christ, in his resurrected body, ate a fish. Remember that in Luke 24?
Yeah, sure.
He says, a spirit hath not flesh and bones. He says, I am not a ghost. I'm not an ethereal thing. Give me a fish. And he ate the fish. And that's our future. And see, that's the way what Johnny was trying to say is, I'm actually going to dance, and I'm going to dance my body. So she's forcing you to say, take hold of this hope and think about that. So that's what she's doing. Perfect example.
We're talking to Tim and Kathy Keller. Tim's new book is called Hope in Times of Fear, The Resurrection and the Meaning of Easter. Okay, so give us an update on how things are with you guys. Tim, we talked to you maybe a month ago about your article that came out in The Atlantic on death, and it's a great article. It's gotten a lot. I don't know how many people have read it, but you have to be really gratified in that. Kath, we've talked to you since. And so how are things?
Hmm. We'll know more at the beginning of May how things are, if you mean how Tim's cancer treatment's going. He's been on a lower dose, less aggressive form of chemotherapy since the end of beginning of February, and his newest scan will be the beginning of May, so we will see where we are at that point. But again, there's something a friend of ours is an oncologist called scanxiety. It's the anxiety
yeah,
you feel
yeah, sure.
as the next scan comes up. And right. Kate Bowler, who is dealing with stage 4 colon
sure.
cancer, she says you live in 3 months chunks from scan to scan. So we're trying not to give in to the dread, to the fear. You know, what will it show? What will it say? We know, will there be continued progress the way we've seen the last scans? And continue with that, Lord, we can glorify you no matter what it says. We don't need to be to fear bad news. Don't fear bad news, because either you're not going to get bad news, or if you get bad news, it's nothing to fear, because the worst thing that the George Herbert poem, Tim? The worst thing that death can do to you is the best thing death can do to you is send you to Jesus. So
George Herbert says death used to be an executioner, but the Gospels made him just a gardener.
No,
meaning he just plants you so that you become something even better. But the answer is that we do live. Most cancer patients live almost from in 3 month sections, and you know what your life's going to be like for 3 months, and then every 3 months it could completely change depending on what the scan shows, and that's a whole new approach, and it does mean you have to put your whole life back on the altar, as it were, as Kathy's been saying, every 3 months, because you say, boy, if things go well, then I can go do this, I can go do that, we can go see my grandchildren, we can do that. But if not, then suddenly all the plans go away. And so every 3 months you have to essentially put your entire life back on the altar and say, Lord, you know, and we trust you.
Right. We're talking with Tim Keller, Kathy Keller. Tim Keller's new book is called Hope in Times of Fear, Resurrection and the Meaning of Easter. Tim, you know, Kath and I follow you in social media, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter. And to be honest, you know, I love following you on social media, because in these really – I'm sure that there have been times, but you know, the immediacy of the lightning rod weirdness of the times that we live in. And thankfully you're so accessible. You take a lot of hits, but you do so with great aplomb and oftentimes humor and wonderful insight. Can you talk about that? How you choose to engage the wider world, believers and non-believers alike, and present the gospel of Christ, and to do so, I believe, in a winsome way.
Well, I'm very glad you feel that way, because a lot of people do not think that. And by the way, Kathy and I have to continually debate. You've got to be very careful about putting too much time into social media. I do think social media can just suck you dry. But what I've decided to do recently is I do think, and we've talked about this a bit here on the program, is that there is a danger on the right and the left, and that, I'm not talking politically so much. I'm just saying Christianity, on the one hand, does speak against injustice, and it does speak against racism. On the other hand, it also says that sex is only between a man and a woman in marriage. It says things are a matter of faith, but on the other hand, it also says you can weigh. And come to conclusions about whether Christianity is true or not. And by my getting out there, what I do, I have to just let you know, every so often I actually say something somewhat intentionally to get one group to come after me, so that I can actually show not only graciousness, but I can actually, I have an opportunity to give more reasons for why Christians believe what they believe. So I am trying to model for people a way of being willing to be out there and to speak in ways that people can understand, at the same time do it kind of graciously. And when I get a rise out of other people, the people don't like what I'm saying, it does show usually that I'm landing some blows, but I'm doing it in love. So that's right now, that's my philosophy.
Well, you know, kudos. I'm grateful to hear you. I'm not trying to congratulate, like, you know, good job getting more followers on Twitter. I'm just saying that I get so excited and grateful when there are more reasonable people.
We need it so much.
Yeah, who are meeting together on social media, because, you know, the extremes of every conversation are killing us. We talked earlier in the program today about, you know, John and I have to spend a lot of time on social media, especially on Twitter for, you know, this job that we have. And we tend to start thinking that the people on Twitter are like the wider world. And, you know, the percentage right. of people who are on Twitter versus the wild world.
Tiny.
It's very pitiful.
It's the other way around.
Yeah. It's very, actually, there have been studies and they're, the large part of humanity are not on Twitter. And the large part of people on Twitter are
not humanity.
Not reasonable. not reasonable people. They're there yeah. because there's a New Yorker cartoon where one dog is speaking to another, saying, "On the internet, no one knows you're a dog. You know, on the internet, no one knows you're living in a basement and, you know, haven't had a job and
right.
haven't shaved in a week. And you can sound like a professor at Harvard, and no one knows that you really." Don't really know what you're talking about. You can sound very erudite. You can create your identity, the identity you wish to present on the social media, and it doesn't have to have anything to do with your real identity. It's like an
right.
avatar.
We were also surprised that there were so many epidemiologists in this country. I mean, holy heck,
who
knew?
Could I suggest a book? Could I suggest yeah. your readers a book? It's not a Christian book, but it's still a good book. It's called, it's new, it's called Breaking the Social Media Prism, PRISM, The Social Media Prism, by Chris Bail, BAIL. He's a Duke University sociologist, and I won't even try to explain what he says, but it's a new book, and it's actually pretty readable, even though it's an academic book. And it would really help, I think, Christians understand what's going on online. I won't go into it now unless you want, maybe some future time we can talk more about it.
Very good. Oh. Excellent. So our audience, we've talked about this in the past. You are a Yinzer by birth, a Pittsburgher,
yes.
Gone far afield to the big city. But tell us for a second about growing up here in the city of Pittsburgh.
Let me give a shout out to my fourth yeah. grade teacher, Miss Hussey, Jane Hussey Freilich, who is in her 80s now and living in Monroeville. And still writes to me and keeps up with me. And if
Aww.
You're listening, Ms. Hussey, hi.
Nice.
Also, friends and family still around the Pittsburgh area. But, yeah, I was born at Shadyside Hospital, and I returned there as a 12-year-old to be a candy striper and did my summer candy stripe volunteering there through high school, through
wow.
college, really. By then, I had sort of... This will make people who have insurance issues turn pale. I was in the OR in the recovery room, and I had to wear scrubs, so they couldn't tell me from the adult nurses. And doctors would say, "Nurse, come over here," and I'd walk into where they were doing heart surgery or whatever.
Oh my God.
But I had planned to be a doctor and go to University of Pittsburgh Med School, and then God diverted me to seminary. Otherwise, I'd be a graduate of UP Med School. So,
oh, that's fabulous. Uh-oh. What a great story. Okay, so I'm sure in those candy striper days, slash nurse, you had to see some bizarre things. You had to walk out of there at the end of your shift and go, "What was that all about?"
Oh, yeah. I mean... I've been there for so long. I mean, starting at 12 and going through 18 every summer for 6 years or more, they just moved me around to different departments. And, I can tell stories. And I can also make a bed with hospital corners with the best of them, so a quarter bounces on it, let me tell
Not
you.
Not as well as me.
Oh, now Tim's bragging.
You're good. You're good. Mm-hmm. You were a Boy Scout, so I have to give you kudos. Yes.
It's hard when the Boy Scout and the candy striper start to compete.
Yeah,
isn't
that's one tidy fold, is it not?
All right, Kath, talk to us about some of your memorable birthdays, either when you were growing up or after you met Tim and moved to the big city.
Well, birthdays are hard to be memorable when you're a pastor's wife, because especially mine often fell on Holy Week or Easter itself, and it really had to sort of give way to the schedule. So the memorable parts of my birthdays, I think, go back to my childhood, where I shared a birthday with my sister Sue, She was on April 9th, I was April 15th, so we always shared the birthday. My mom would make, and I give you all this recipe, she would give make a double layer cake and put little candy canes on the side, stick them right into the icing, and with a little dab of icing, put the animal crackers so that it looked like a carousel with a little construction paper roof. I know, wasn't that? She really took time, and we were, Sue and I were the two oldest out of five, so, you know, it was, my mom, you know, really did what she could with limited resources, but it was, so, yeah, it was, and, you know, well, I can tell this story, too, because everybody in our family knows it, so it's not going to shake anybody up. She, after the first three of us were born, she found herself unexpectedly pregnant with the fourth, and then again the fifth, and she got the number of somebody who would do abortions illegally and got as far as lifting the phone off the hook and then put it back down again and said, no, I can't do it. And she wasn't even a Christian and knew that that was wrong, that it was wrong to do, that no matter how it was going to be a disruption to her life, no matter, I mean, I used to say, if I got pregnant in my 40s or my 50s, I was going to have someone do a poster, and I'd say, I'm the poster child here. If I can do this, you can do this. You know, this is tough. Yeah. I know it's tough. It's tough to have the three that I already have. But if you if you have unexpected pregnancies, there's people who are willing to help. I have a dear friend whose daughter is trying to adopt, and she stands outside an abortion clinic with a sign saying, willing to adopt, just hoping that somebody on their way in will stop and talk to her and they can work something out.
Well, that's fabulous. And for your mom, too, for her to have the transparency and the courage to share that with the family.
Yeah, she did. She did when we were getting older and, you know, abortions weren't illegal anymore. She still told us that story. And I think her instinct was to say, just because it's easier now doesn't make it right.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so Tim, Kathy's birthday is today. Of course, you've shared many birthdays with each other over your married life. Manhattan, what's the state of Manhattan? And of course, post-COVID, you've had shots. Do you have any feeling about the freedom to go out and maybe share a dinner on a sidewalk cafe somewhere?
No, we don't. We don't have that freedom yet. It's double, see, because it's also true that my chemotherapy is every 2 weeks. It's not just COVID. I mean, frankly, I shouldn't be getting anything. In other words, if I catch a cold, if I catch a, you know, get a virus of some other kind or something like that, then it interrupts the chemo, which is not good at all. And of course, my lymphocytes and all that stuff is low because of the, I have to get white blood cell booster shots and all that sort of thing. So we've actually, we have, with the vaccinations, we have stopped not seeing our grandchildren. So we are seeing our grandchildren regularly. We're having one of our grandsons coming over in a couple nights. He's going to stay overnight. But for almost everybody else, we've decided we're going to give it some longer time.
Right.
And so that it just seems like that's the best way to be a steward of our situation.
Yeah. All right. This might be a more important question for you, Tim, and certainly more pressing. Will you be making a carousel cake for Kath?
It is very
pressing.
We're
going to put a candle in a piece of gingerbread that a friend sent us from England. So
international dessert.
Very nice.
It is, yeah. And can I go back to something you said right at the beginning about New York City emptying out? Because there was an article in my news feed that I sent to our son, who's an urban planner and knows the actual statistics about 30,000 people leaving Astoria, which is the neighborhood he lives in, during the COVID pandemic. And he sent back a text saying, oh, that's ridiculous, 8,000 people left. And he has, you know, the most accurate statistics. But there's been a real sort of negative inflation of New York emptying out. I'm looking at a traffic jam right this minute out my window on the FDR. The people who have left have not been anywhere near as numerous, and life is really, you know, pretty much returning to normal.
That's great to hear. Good. Because, I mean, I'm envisioning, you know, looking at the morning TV shows, you know, the morning news shows, like Times Square is empty and no one's wandering around. The theaters are dark and people are in despair. And, you know, there's Will Smith and tumbleweeds, you know, blowing down Broadway.
And that's not a good show. That's not a good show to have on TV right this minute. The I Am Legend with New York MC and the tumbleweeds flying down the street.
There will be changes, and it'll be changes. But it's in some ways, you know, what I like is I do like smaller cities. Even though I live in New York, this is my calling. The fact is that a lot of people who are leaving, say L.A., San Francisco, New York, the biggest cities, most expensive, they're going to places like Nashville or Austin or Atlanta or other places.
Sure.
And that's actually all right. There's no reason why we can't share the wealth, the human wealth, as it were, with others. So it's really not a it may not be. And also, it's God's way of moving people where he wants them. And by the way, I have to say there's a lot of great churches in places like Nashville and Atlanta. We hate to see especially Christians leave and go other places because they feel for various reasons they can't stay here any longer. But Kathy's right in saying it's a little exaggerated to say it's not a huge exodus, but it's there, and I just see God at work in it right now. So
actually taking the pressure off the housing crisis because New York has been facing that for a long time. As the housing crisis has been really severe. There have been, our son could quote you the statistics, so many jobs added and like half the number of housing units as people. So it's been a difficult situation, and maybe this is taking some of that pressure off.
I hope Pittsburgh will pick up people from the bigger cities because Pittsburgh is a more livable city.
Yeah,
it's like Nashville.
It's a great city.
Oh, yeah. We recommend it to anybody.
Pittsburgh's changed. I mean, the housing market here used to be cheap for many, many years. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you're going to spend some money here for a house.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the change. I mean, I saw an article in today's Times about, you know, the housing situation in Manhattan where a young woman was saying, I've been living in a 750-square-foot studio, and I'm ready to step up. And you think, God bless you, 750 square feet. That's a tiny little imprint.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh, here's the thing, though. I do think Pittsburgh, places like Pittsburgh and Nashville become more expensive, and yet it's still a good deal because of the kind of all that you can get in a city. So, and ultimately it'll help the economy. I mean, you don't want it to go too high, the housing, but it'll help the economy too. So I think that the future is bright for all the cities of the country. It's not curtains for anybody.
Let's go put our foot on the gas and get out there.
Exactly.
Well, Jeff, it's really always a great pleasure. Thanks so much for, you know, sharing your life with us, for being so transparent about
it. And happy birthday, Kath.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's really good. So listen, we're praying for you and hope the good news is coming down here in May and you move forward for the next 3 month chunk.
Yes. Thank you. That's going to be wonderful.
Our pleasure. Mm-hmm. Tim and Kathy Keller. Tim Keller's brand new book is called Hope in Times of Fear, Resurrection and the Meaning of Easter. Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.